Tonight, you're going to make a memory that will last a lifetime. That memory could be of you standing in a roaring crowd, helping your team defend home ice. Or that memory could be of you watching the game at home, while your spouse clips her toenails, and your son practices the saxophone, and your daughter makes a smoothie. Get your tickets on StubHub. Your ticket out.
You're listening to Dean Blundell and Company. Download the Sportsnet app in the App Store. Then listen online and on your phone. Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's Dean Blundell and Company, Monday, the 24th day of October, 7 degrees now. We'll see a high of 10. Lots to get to. Tiki Barber is standing by. NFL insider Tiki Barber, former New York Giant and Pro Bowler Tiki Barber, will break down Week 7. Interesting stories, including a 6-6 tie. 6-6 tie. Man. And the most, I'll tell you what, the best part of that Cardinals-Seahawks game? Two missed field goals. That was the most exciting part of the entire game.
Well, if you like defense, Dean.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, woo, defense.
Anyway, Tiki Barber's going to join us coming up in a minute. Also, you can go and vote for our Twitter poll questions. We got a couple up there. One includes this band and Nirvana. Who is the best band? Ignore the other two, Soul Decision and 98 Degrees. Is it the Foo Fighters? Is it Nirvana? Where are we at?
45% of voters so far say Foo Fighters. 42% Nirvana. 7% 98 Degrees. And 6% to Canadian heartthrob R&B.
See what
band,
you did? The 6 and the 7% probably should go to Nirvana.
Well, because that's who you want to win.
No, but it's like,
what are
this
you, Donald
Gary,
Trump?
This Gary.
The people have spoken. They're voting.
Say the same thing.
I win if it was, you know, it's a rig.
It's like Gary Johnson, who's running in the Libertarian in the United States election. He's screwing it up for Donald Trump. You're screwing this up for me.
And the other poll question, 5 games into the season, how are you feeling as a Leafs fan right now? 59% encouraged, 26% uninterested, and 15% frustrated. Mm. A big surprise at the amount of people uninterested in this young, exciting team.
Julie tweets me, it's been a long time since I've enjoyed watching a Leafs game, and I'm loving these young guys. Mm. Anyway, Tiki Barber standing by. We'll get to him as well. We talked to David Kaplan, who does the pre and post game for the Chicago Cubs earlier this morning, real early, and it was a great interview. We'll have part of that for you coming up in just a few minutes as well. Right now, it's time to get you up to date. Here's Jorge.
And it's brought to you by Katie and Eric at 401 Dixie Kia. Maple Leafs off. They lost Saturday night in that shootout to the Blackhawks, blowing that 2-goal third period lead. They'll face off against the Lightning tomorrow down at the ACC, 7:30 on Sportsnet 1 and Rogers Game Center Live. The Raptors kick off their season Wednesday at home to Detroit, but they lost forward Jaren Sullinger to a he needs a screw inserted into his fifth metatarsal in his left foot. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. We'll talk to the head coach, Dwayne Casey, at 8:33. Some football last night. The Sunday nighter between the Cardinals and Seahawks tied 6-6 in overtime. The Bills lost in Miami to the Dolphins 28-25. World Series gets going tomorrow. Corey Kluber will go in game one for the Indians. 8 o'clock, Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. And Toronto FC beat the Chicago Fire 3-2 yesterday. They'll host the Philadelphia Union on Wednesday in a do-or-die playoff game.
Thank you, sir. It is 8:04. A great pleasure to welcome back to the program former NFLer, three-time Pro Bowler, NFL insider, Tiki Barber. Hi, Tiki. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
You know, we're good. We're good. It was. We were just talking about how funny that game was last night, listening to Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth go, oh, my God. Chris Collinsworth laughing at the play, and Al Michaels saying this is impossible. Have you in your life seen a 6-6 tie? You might have. I haven't.
No, I don't think I ever have, and especially a 6-6 tie between two really good teams in the National Football League, and especially one in the Cardinals who are prone to score. I understand that Seattle has a great defense, and this is a division tilt for the NFC West, and what I think happened is that both of these teams came in unsure of how to attack the other, and so they played fundamental football. And by that I mean all right, we're not going to take any risk. Right? You didn't see Arizona or Seattle, really, and Russell Wilson's a pretty good deep ball passer, but you didn't see either one of these teams pulling the ball downfield. It's like, let's get our 3 yards in a cloud of dust. All right, and then we'll punt, and we'll play field position. And eventually, you know, field position will work in our favor, and then we'll kick a field goal or maybe get close enough to score a touchdown. It felt like that back and forth, you know, old school, you know, fundamental football for the entire game until at the end you're like, oh, wait, we got to score. And then we just had two missed field goals by two really good kickers in Canizero and Hauschka, which is just an anomaly, I think, in the game. But either way, it was a very, very, very slow game with only 12 points total scored.
Teague, where are those teams in the NFC? Because I'm not sure we know who the best team in the NFC is.
Oh, man, that's a great question. I mean, you got to point the Cowboys simply because of how well they've run the ball, which is, again, I go back to those fundamentals, and I love the young talent, Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott, the quarterback. I think the Falcons, even though they faltered a little bit this weekend, simply because they're so explosive as an offense. But there's not a ton. Like, you wanted to say the Vikings, and the Vikings were a team that were mistake-free, but then we saw that game against the Eagles this past weekend where Carson Wentz and Sam Bradford and those two offenses traded turnovers for the basically entire first quarter. And it just felt ugly. I think they were due for a game like that, but still, it felt ugly. And it kind of starts to make you question whether or not they truly are the elite team in the NFC. So I don't know if there is one, to be honest with you.
Mm. Yeah, you know what? And we were laughing about it this morning, too, other than, once again, and it gets boring saying it decade after decade and year after year, the New England Patriots. You know, you've got some divisions that are, you know, I don't know that because usually you have, and this is maybe the better point, usually you have two, three teams at this point of the season that are, you know, 5-0, 6-0. You don't have a lot of teams that are this close in their division. And you look at the AFC West, Oakland Raiders 5-2, Kansas City Chiefs 4-2, Broncos 4-2, San Diego Chargers, a hell of a win yesterday. They're 3-4. And there seems to be a real glut. And it's not like the separation between four or five teams and the rest of the field is as big as it is. And it just seems like it's the Patriots, and that's pretty much it this year.
No, you're right. The Patriots are a team that will be a part of a conversation that you're going to start hearing a lot. And it's about the consistency. I mean, we've heard it for years, but it's even more so this year because it feels like every team rides the roller coaster except for the Patriots, right? Every team is up 1 week and down one week. They're up the next week, they're down for a couple weeks, whatever it may be. But the Patriots have this eliteness in the way that they scout, the way that they coach, the way that they maintain their program, you know, and it permeates throughout every level, right? From the GM through the equipment staff, through the training staff, all to the coaches, the players. There's a consistency there that almost ensures that you're getting a good product on a Sunday. Every team can't say that. You talk about these divisions that are tight. I mean, yeah, the AFC West is very tight. But if I look at the Raiders, Chiefs, Broncos, I can't tell you who's going to win that division with any confidence. The same thing can be said, you know, say for the Cowboys about the NFC East, which is actually the tightest division in football because every team is above 500 with the Giants getting that win over in London against the Rams, albeit an ugly win. They got a win. So I don't want to say it's parity because that's the word we use too much. I don't want to say it's mediocrity because that's the meaning of very difficult game, but there is an eliteness that only exists for probably one team in the National Football League, and that's the Patriots.
Are we back to thinking the Eagles are for real after beating the Vikings yesterday, Teague?
I think Jim Schwartz got back on track. Jim Schwartz, obviously being a defensive coordinator, defensively they did something that they didn't do the last week, which was make big stops and cause turnovers. Right, when you're disruptive and you hit the quarterback and you come up with these schemes, which is old school Philly, by the way, with all these different, you know, schemes that make you confused as an offensive player, and you can get to the quarterback, then that puts you in position to win, and that's what you have to do when you have a young quarterback. Yeah, I know that Carson Wentz was fantastic early on, first three games of the season, but he's still a rookie. And as you grow older, no different than baseball, teams start to get a book on you, right? This guy can't hit the inside slider. The same thing happens with young quarterbacks. You start to get a book on him, and his effectiveness will necessarily, you know, fall down. Now, he'll grow as the year goes on. He'll grow as the years go on. But the book on Carson Wentz, I think, is available now. And so the only way that they're going to win is if they play great on the other sides, other parts of their team, which primarily is defense.
Speaking of are they for real, yesterday Buffalo had me believing until the fourth quarter. good football game nonetheless. They lose to Miami, though, 28-25. So do you put them in the for real category, or was that like a reality check? Hey, listen, we still are who we are.
I think what Anthony Lynn brought when he took over for Greg Roman was this: we will win by getting the ball to LeSean McCoy. So when he goes out in the third quarter with a hamstring injury, it was almost like, wow, where's our energy? Like, where do we find the playmaker? And they couldn't. And on the other side, you got to give credit to the Miami Dolphins offensive line. They've gotten healthy. They've gotten, I think, better at protecting Ryan Tannehill. More importantly, they commit to the run. I mean, when I say commit to the run, I mean really commit to the run, because if you go look at the stats, they ran the ball 41 times. Right? Nobody does that in the National Football League anymore. We're in a 3-4 wide, quarterback driven league. They ran the ball 41 times, had extra linemen in there to block for Jay Ajayi, who rushed 200 yards for the second week in a row. And yeah, Ryan Tannehill had a decent day, 200 yards and a touchdown, but this was all about controlling the line of scrimmage and not trying to be fancy. And when you realize that no one on the other side can hurt you because LeSean was hurt, you saw this methodical comeback. It was almost like a Pac-12 team getting beat up by a Big Ten team. Right? Just slowly, methodically, eventually grind you down and got the win in an old school way.
Teak, we saw the Jags get beat up by the Raiders at home. Is Gus Bradley now the clubhouse leader to get gassed first?
Yeah. No, he's the guy. there were so many guys at the beginning of the year who you could have said, oh, it's on the bubble. Rex Ryan was one. I think he's pulled himself off of it. Chuck Pagano, I think he's pulling himself off of it a little bit. Jeff Fisher, same way, but I think he's pulled himself off of it. Gus Bradley, with what they have surrounded him with talent-wise, I mean, you can look at every player. Chris Ivory is a good player at running back. Blake Bortles is supposed to be a good player at quarterback. Marcus Lee and Hearns and Julius Thomas, remember they brought him in from Denver. Like, the talent is ridiculous. They've had high first round picks on the defensive side of the ball, including Fowler and all these other guys for the last couple of years, but the product's not there. And at some point, you can't change all the players. You can't get rid of management. Eventually, it's going to be the coach. I think his time is numbered down in Jacksonville.
Hey, did you see Matt Stafford? Speaking of which, the Lions won on the weekend to beat the Washington Redskins 2017. Matt Stafford, yeah. 18 of 29, 266 with a touchdown. And you're missing Calvin Johnson. And I think you had a laugh at the end of last season. You're like, well, now we're going to see really what Matt Stafford's all about. And he's turned into quietly one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, minus Megatron.
He's gotten better. You know why? Because he doesn't have a crutch. And he's a guy who has you hurt your knee or something, and you get a crutch, and it just feels very comfortable to walk on that crutch. You don't have to really work that hard. That's what it was with Megatron. You throw the ball up to him. You're getting a bind, and you stop having to read a defense. What coverage are they throwing at me? I don't know. I'm just going to throw it up to Megatron, and he's going to go get it, 70% of the time. But when that's gone and that crutch is no longer there, and you got to start walking on your own, you got to start reading defenses and finding Marvin Jones and Golden Tate, even Anquan Boldin, who had the lone touchdown, receiving touchdown for Matt Stafford yesterday, you learn how to be a quarterback. Now, we've always known he's had the talent, right? He had it coming out of Georgia. He had some health issues early, but he's had the talent. He had the cannon of an arm. He's got the ability. He just never had to. Now he has to, and it's starting to show itself as Detroit pulls themselves over 500. And so this was a great win for them. And I think, obviously, being at home, they respected the win. But Matt Stafford didn't make mistakes, and he hasn't made a ton of mistakes back into last year.
Teague, real quick, Ryan Fitzpatrick came in for the injured Geno Smith and led them to victory.
Man.
Just want to play you a quick clip of what he said about, who should start next week.
I don't know what decision they're going to make or what.
Sorry, Teague, here's that clip.
I don't know what decision they're going to make or what Geno's health is going to be like. But, I think I should start every week.
Should he start every week, Teague?
All he had to say was nothing. Seriously. It's like, look, Geno got hurt. I'm back in. It's now my responsibility to play better. That's all I had to say. Instead, not only that, I'm sure you played his other clip where he said, it's hard when, your GM and your head coach and your owner don't believe in you, and I've gone through that in my career, and now I'm going through it again. It's like, wait, are you trying to get benched, right? You're trying to just take your $12 million and walk away without playing another down? Because it's not conduct detrimental, obviously, but it sounds odd, and it just feels like, ugh.
It's immature.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. What are you talking about? Right, I got my football. I'm going to go home now. I mean, what do you? Ryan Fitzpatrick's earned everything that he's gotten in this league. You want to say he earned that $12 million that he got this year because of the 31 touchdowns he had last year? Fantastic. You want to, but you also have to then say you earned your benching, Ryan Fitzpatrick, because you threw 11 interceptions in the second half over the last four games and have been the reason that your team has lost. People get benched for that. I don't care how much money you're making or how good you actually think you are. People get benched when you don't perform, including you.
It's funny because it's the one thing I keep telling my kids, you get what you earn. You earn what you get, right? And in negative and positive circumstances.
Exactly. And especially in a perceptual league, I mean, as much as it is about production, but it's also a perceptual league, even if you feel a certain way, you don't say certain things. You know what I mean? You keep it to yourself. Clearly, he's been, you know, getting gassed up by his friends as he got put on the bench over the last weekend, and he just couldn't help himself but say what was on his mind, or at least was on his friend's mind, or at least what his friends put in his mind, and just makes what feels like, oh, okay, this was good. You know, he got his job back, and he played really well. All right, go sit down again. I don't really want to hear you.
Hey, Teak, as always, great pleasure to have you. Thanks for doing this.
Take care, guys.
Have a great week. That's Teague Barber, former New York Giant, former NFL. Wanted to talk to him about Josh Brown, too. Maybe we'll get to that next week. Wonder what's going to happen with him.
He's going to get released and never play in the NFL again?
Good. 8:16. This hour is brought to you by Jack Link's Hangry Moments. You're not hungry, you're hangry. Reach for a bag of always delicious, protein-packed, super nutritious, low-calorie goodness, Jack Link's Beef Jerky. The official beef jerky of your Toronto Blue Jays. Feed your wild side. Earlier, we got a chance to sit down and talk with David Kaplan. He is the pre- and post-game host for the Chicago Cubs on Comcast Sportsnet and radio host for ESPN 1000 in Chicago. Here's a bit of that interview. David Kaplan, take us through the emotions of yourself and Cubs fans after what that win on Saturday night.
I feel like there are times I have to play therapist on the air. I'm not kidding you. Last week, that's the team that won 103 games, and during the Giants series, they won it in four. But there was a strong chance when you're down 5-2 in the ninth at San Francisco in game four that you think, oh boy, we're going to have a game five in Chicago, and Johnny Cueto, who we beat 1-0 in game one, is going to start. There's a chance that it doesn't look like it's going to go well. The pressure in Chicago, if there had been a game five, would have been insane. Maybe not on the players, but the fan base would have, I mean, seriously had a tough time handling it. They get by that. Now they get to the Dodgers. They win game one on the grand slam by Montero, and then the next home run, the next batter by Fowler. So we win that game 8-4. And then they lose to Kershaw 1-0. They go to L.A. They lose to Rich Hill 6-0. He pitches great. And I went on the air on the post-game show because if you looked at Twitter, it was, it's over. Once again, they're going to break our heart. And blah, blah, blah. They're choking. They're this, they're that. It's 2-1. And we won 103 games. And I started the post-game show with Todd Hollinsworth, my partner, the former Rookie of the Year with the Dodgers. And I said, Holly, we got to stop a second. I looked in the camera and I said, if this fan base is this soft, you know what? Turn off your TV, go to bed, and don't pay attention the rest of the year because it's embarrassing how soft some, not all, some of our fan base is. And I mean, I was really ticked. It got to the point where bench Rizzo because he was in a slump, bench Addison Russell. They want to play guys who hadn't even been on the team all year.
Yeah.
And thank goodness our management doesn't think that way. Now here they are, and they're in the World Series. And there were people literally, I'm standing on the field, people crying, holding up signs of departed ones. Picture, you know, my dad died in 1994. My dad died in 2010. And I haven't had a chance to, you know, they're not going to see this. And they're holding these signs up with tears rolling down their face. There were 300,000 people outside the stadium. I mean, it was just an amazing. I knew it'd be big. I had no idea how big it would be for this city. It's crazy.
And you know what? It's a wonderful story too, because you know, it really is generation after generation after generation that is that has gone through this ride where, you know, that's just been, and even the Sammy Sosa years and, you know, Steve Bartman and that whole thing. And you really started to wonder, you know, maybe there are just teams of bad destiny, and maybe the Chicago Cubs are one of those teams, as are the Toronto Maple Leafs, may I remind you. But you know, in the big scheme of things, you know, it was fascinating for me to watch because, you know, you knew you were part of history, even though the Jays are out and we've lauded the Jays, and obviously you'd love to have the Jays there. But either way, you knew you were part of history because the Chicago Cubs, it was a foregone conclusion before every series and every postseason, if they made it into the postseason, which hasn't been often, that it just wouldn't matter anyway because they were the Chicago Cubs, right? So that maybe went into the thinking that these fans had where it was over and bench Addison Russell and sit Anthony Rizzo. But is it a feeling there now like it's a foregone conclusion? Has kind of the tide swayed to, hey, listen, to lose to the Indians who had a crap fest against Toronto? It was it was the race to see who played worse, and the team that played marginally better than the other team won. Is it a foregone conclusion, or are you taking the Indians lightly, or do you think that this is going to be a hell of a series?
I mean, look, Corey Kluber is really, really good. We have a really good team. They have some really good players. I don't think anyone's taking them lightly, but I think I've sensed that the fact that they're in the World Series, the fan base has taken a deep breath and went, wow. You know, Billy Goat said we're never going back to the World Series, and here we are. We're in the World Series, so let's just enjoy this ride and see where it goes. Now, if they lose Tuesday night to Kluber and everyone will freak out again, oh, my God, here we go. But I think it's shifted a little bit because they've now proven how stupid. There's no curses. There's no goats. We had horrible management. I'm sure the Maple Leafs made some really stupid decisions, but I'm writing a book right now on the rebuild that'll be out opening day next season. And as I research this, I mean, you wouldn't believe how idiotic and cheap some of the decision-making was for this franchise for so many years, how awful their draft record is, their trade record. And you look back and you go, there was no GOAT. We had some of the stupidest management in the history of baseball. And so that's why they weren't winning. I think the fact that we're there, people have kind of embraced it and gone, wow, I guess we're not cursed.
David, is there a small portion of the fan base that kind of wants the Cubs to lose this series to keep that lovable losers title?
No. I don't know one person like that. No chance. Absolutely not. Nobody wants. They're excited to be there. It's enough with the nonsense already and the lovable loser. And if you're in Chicago now during a ball game and you're just walking around outside and you see these, I'm not kidding you, tens of thousands of people outside the stadium walls. They had 300,000 people descend on the stadium once we won. And they were jamming the bars in the streets. People want to win, man. It's time for the nonsense to be over. Plus, I'm in a two-team town. And don't forget the White Sox won it in 2005. So Cub fans had to live with that. They had to wear that because in 2003, we thought we had it. The whole Bartman thing and Alex Gonzalez happens. We don't win. So, yeah, no. People, I don't know one person that doesn't want to win.
Are even White Sox fans cheering for the Cubs?
Like my brother, we both despised the other team. That was his kids. And I remember he would call me when the Cubs would blow a save late at night on the West Coast. And it's, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning here. And I had a newborn and he would call and just rip me because it would just wake my new baby up. I'll never forget that. And he'd be like, yeah, the Cubs lost to LA, and he'd hang up on me. And now I've got some friends who are, I want you to experience what we experienced in 2005. There's still the group of Sox fans that are livid this is going on. And I respect them because when you're born here, you pick one. You don't root for both. You're not a cat-dog fan. You either like cats or you like dogs. I've always believed that. I raised my kids that way. But I have friends that work over there now. I have to cover them. This is what I do for a living. But I've never hidden the fact when the Cubs play the Sox, I want to beat the White Sox. I'm a Cub guy. That's who I am, and that's how I'll die. But I think there are some Sox fans that over time, and their team is so bad right now, that they want their Cub fan friends to experience what they already experienced.
That was David Kaplan earlier on this morning. David Kaplan, of course, the Cubs pre- and post-game host and guest of ours from time to time. He works for Comcast Sportsnet, hosts a show on ESPN 1000 Chicago. The Cubs book their ticket to the World Series. That goes tomorrow night. Cubs-Indians, game 1, 8 p.m. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can watch it on Sportsnet television as well. Hell of a story. Both teams in the history and the lack of success therein. Hold on. Coach Casey, Coach Dwayne Casey, coming up next. Big loss for him before he starts the season. Expectations will set him with Coach Casey, head coach of the Toronto Raptors next. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
You're listening to Dean Blundell and Company on Toronto's Sports Radio, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Come as you are, as you were. 8:31 morning. Couple Twitter poll questions to update you on. One to do with this band. We got into it with Jeff Merrick, who suggested the Foo Fighters were a better band than Nirvana. I had to correct him, which is a fact. Who's a better band? Nirvana or the Foo Fighters? So far, the Foo Fighters with 45% of the vote, Nirvana with 43%. Not that I need people to go and vote, but please do so. For Nirvana. As someone pointed out on Twitter, there is no Foo Fighters if there is no Nirvana, so there is no point in including the Foo Fighters in that conversation. Although I do love the Foo Fighters. Also, the other Twitter poll question that we're at, because the Leafs lost again in the third period, that is their fourth loss come from behind loss. That was your fourth. In a two-goal game, they were up 4-2 in the third, and they lose 5-4. How do you feel about the Ryan Favreau? How do you feel about the, what are we, have five games into the season? How are you feeling as a Leaf fan right now?
59% of voters say encouraged, 26% say uninterested, and 15% say frustrated. I think the biggest shock is the 26% saying uninterested in this young, exciting Leafs group. So should that be concerning?
I think goaltending should be concerning.
Big time.
Yeah. 8:32, Dwayne Casey, the head coach of your Toronto Raptors, joins us next a couple days ahead of the season opener. We'll get to that. Expectations, a couple other questions, another injury to talk about, or preventative measures, actually, as Jared Sullinger is out with a screw in his foot that happens today. We'll get to that. Coach Casey next. Right now it's time for an update. Here's George.
And Dean, it's brought to you by driversfirst.ca. Maple Leafs off tonight. They host the Tampa Bay Lightning tomorrow on Sportsnet 1 and on Rogers Game Center live at 7:30. Leafs, of course, fresh off that 5-4 shootout loss in Chicago on Saturday night. You just talked about it. For Jared Sullinger, will have a screw inserted into his fifth metatarsal in his left foot. He'll be out around 4 to 6 weeks. The head coach of the Raptors joins us straight ahead. They kick off their season Wednesday at home to the Detroit Pistons. Sunday night football last night, the Cardinals and Seahawks tied 6-6 in overtime while the Bills lost in Miami to the Dolphins 28-25. And Toronto FC beat the Chicago Fire 3-2. They'll play the Philadelphia Union at BMO in a do-or-die playoff game on Wednesday.
Thank you, sir. It is 8:34 right now, 7 degrees, a high today of 10. Please welcome to the program the head coach of your Toronto Raptors, Mr. Dwayne Casey. Coach, how are you, sir?
Hey, Dean. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you? You enjoy your time off this summer? Are you refreshed, ready for another grind?
Ready to roll, ready to go into the grind. And guys have been working hard for about 2 months now. And excited about Wednesday night coming up and ready to roll.
Now, take us through. You got news yesterday. Jared Sullinger is out, and he was an acquisition in the offseason to replace Bismack and eat up some minutes and play on the glass. He could shoot the three. So he was an intriguing prospect to me, much like Bismack was last year. Different players, but take me through exactly what's wrong with his foot and what happened and what's going to happen today.
Well, he had been having soreness in his foot. And so, you know, he's trying to let it heal and trying to rest it. And it just continued to be sore. And they went and got different opinions, different x-rays taken. And You know, and this is kind of the layman's view of it and explanation of it. I'm not a doctor, and they found a small crack and felt like that by putting a screw in it was more preventative, that it wouldn't get worse, that type of thing. So unfortunate for Jared, because he was going to be such an important piece, but it's a great opportunity for other players, for Pascal Siakam if we decide to start him, and Patrick Patterson will be able to take more minutes and have more of a role, and our younger guys, Jakob Poeltl, will have an opportunity because Jared was going to play some backup five in that situation, so Lucas Nogueira and Jakob Poeltl will get opportunities to play some backup minutes behind JV. So other opportunities, one man, you know, next, I don't really like saying the term next man up because it means something bad has happened, but it's an opportunity for other players to step in and do their job and have an opportunity to compete and help us win.
Now, take me through what you've seen from Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl to this point in the preseason, and maybe some games early on. How have they progressed, and where do you see them fitting in with this team?
Well, the thing with Pascal and Jakob, they're two young players that, you know, they're going to make mistakes, and and like I tell them all the time, the NBA is a game of mistakes, and the key is you got to make those mistakes hard, and try not to make the same one over and over again. Learn from them, and especially for young players, and that's one thing Pascal does and Jakob does. They make plays, they'll make a mistake, but then they do a great job of recovering from it, and they do it hard. And they're quick learners. They pick up things quickly. Pascal's athleticism at the four position will be important for us because it allows us to do some switching and defensively, and he can guard different positions from that standpoint. So he gives us some flexibility and versatility, and really he's one of those players that, you know, we don't have to rely on for a lot of offense, a little bit different from Pat. And then Poeltl is a very, very versatile big man. He's got great hands, excellent passer, excellent feel for the game, a little bit different from Biombo in the fact that he's not overly explosive in the paint, but he knows how to play, and his anticipation and basketball IQ is off the chart. So that's going to help him down as he continues to get experience and grow into the NBA game.
Dwayne, obviously winning is first and foremost, and obviously playing your veterans, you'll do that. But how tough is it to play those veterans and then get your young guys some minutes and manage both winning games and then trying to help the development along?
George, that is an age-old problem, and fortunately that we've been able to do that. You know, last year we had to play young guys because DeMar Carroll missed so many games, and so we were forced to play younger guys, and we were fortunate enough, guys did an excellent job of stepping in, young guys stepping in and win games at the same time of getting Norm Powell and Terrence Ross extra minutes and for those guys to grow. So it's a fine line between developing and getting, those guys experience in winning. And that's very difficult to do in any sport, whether it's hockey, American football, or whatever the sport is for young players to come in and get you ready to compete at a high level or at a playoff level, because, you know, they have no measuring stick or no point of reference to go from. So it's tough, but our guys have our system kind of fits our star players, our veteran players, and the roles that we really put those guys in are very support roles, where they don't have to think a lot, do a lot, but just make sure they stay in their lane and do their role, and it can help us.
Intriguing the way the last season ended, specifically for one Jonas Valanciunas, who really broke out against the Pacers in the playoffs, unfortunately injured in Miami, so you didn't see a lot of him. But, he had come into his zone and was just a force to be reckoned with. Are you expecting more of that from him, or are you expecting that progress that he made down the stretch into the playoffs to continue?
Dean, that's a good point. You with JV, he did a good job. I mean, he was playing some of his best basketball right before he was injured. And so, you know, try, but he didn't bounce back and didn't come back in the Cleveland series, which was unfortunate. But we expect that out of Jonas this year. He's got to come in and do a tremendous job of rebounding, protecting the rim, protecting the paint, communicating in our transition defense. All those things, he's got to come back and do an extra special job for us in those situations, because he's the hub for us. And, you know, over the past few years, he's been the young guy, so to speak, but now he's got some experience and experienced a lot of things in the league. So he's one of our many veteran players right now. So we expect him to come in and give that leadership in the paint, that communication, that toughness that we need to protect the rim and to protect the paint, because it's a physical game. The NBA is a very, very physical game, and it fits Jonas the way he plays, his body style, his body type. So he's got to give that to us in the paint.
So last year you finished off Eastern Conference Finals. It was a whale of a season, 56 wins, really set the city on fire. You end up losing to the eventual NBA champions in a stunner. As they went on to win, even though being down 3-1. And so the offseason, you get the tinkering, and Kevin Durant now finds himself playing for the Warriors, and you still got the Cavs in the Eastern Conference, Warriors in the Western Conference. A lot of people saying the NBA is a two-team league. What do you tell your players, or how do you feel about the narrative that really it's up to the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers in an NBA final?
Well, the thing about it is, you know, the games are played on paper. You know, played on the court, not on paper. I'm sorry. And I tell the players that all the time. You can't, if we did that back in 2011 when we won the championship in Dallas, we wouldn't have beat the Miami Heat, because everybody had them anointed that they were the champions. LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, they were going to win the championship. Why play the games? Because they're destined to win. Lo and behold, it takes them a while to get together, to learn how to play with each other. The chemistry wasn't there, and we were able to win the championship. So you play the game on the court, and if you went in the season saying, hey, so-and-so is going to win the championship, why play the games? And so as an NBA player, you've got to go in believing you can beat a team. Now, whether realistically or not, whether you're talented enough or not, no, but you've got to believe that in your heart. And when you walk on the floor, you've got to believe that they put their pants on just like you do, the old cliche, and compete at that level. And again, you never know what happens. You know, injuries happen, sickness, whatever, you know, bad team chemistry, those things happen in this league. And so you can't just anoint somebody. And again, it's great for the fans. It's great for, you know, for basketball writers to write about, you know, how great those teams are, and it's good, you know, but you still have to go out and play the game.
Coach, do you think the Raptors are a championship quality team? Do you think that you have just as good a chance to win an NBA championship as anybody else?
Well, you go in every season, you know, believing that. That's your goal, going in every season. You have to be realistic, you know, and again, you know, we have some question marks. You know, how are we going to play in on the defensive side of the ball? How, you know, Jonas is going to bounce back now with, you know, whoever starts at the four position, how that's going to play out. So we have some question marks, but we're building a culture and a program. And we, you know, we've made advances every year to get closer and closer and closer to that ultimate goal. And we're still in that process and building that program. And Masai and Jeff and myself and ownership, we all have a vision of where we want to go, and that goal is to win a championship. Now, whether that's this year or the next year, I don't have a crystal ball, but our goal this year is to get there. Whether we're ready or not, we've got some things to work out and to build and to continue to get better at before we get there.
Over under on how many technicals you might get this season?
How many are you going to pay for me? That, I'll answer that. If you pay for them, I'll get them.
Zero. Then it's zero, Coach.
No. I tell you what, I'm trying to be better at staying off the officials. It's very difficult to do for me and my personality once the game starts, but I'm going to try to do a better job. Because officiating in the NBA is a very difficult thing. I spoke.
That's a really nice way to say it, Coach.
They had me to speak at their training camp this year. I went to their training camp, and of all people, you know, I got a $25,000 fine in the playoffs, and So they invited me in to talk about a coach's outlook toward officials. And I said, do you guys really want to hear how I feel about you? So, but it was good. I was diplomatic and I told the truth. You know, the one thing that you want from a coach is feel like that you're getting a fair shake. I mean, and the fact that, you know, it's a game of mistakes. You're going to make mistakes, but don't try to convince me certain things didn't happen when I saw it with my own eyes. And, you know, so, and then I watched videos and, you know, the game before and saw the same thing. So those things are, it's human nature things that you try to rationalize as a coach as the game is going on. But again, I'm going to say this, it's a very difficult game to officiate. You try to do it in practice every day, and you'll see the NBA players are some of the best actors there is in the world, and they can fool you. And so the officials have a very difficult job, and again, it's a very difficult game to officiate. But I do think we have some of the best officials in the world, but I'm gonna try my best to stay off of them this year.
Who's the best actor in the NBA, Coach?
Whoa, that's a good question. You'd have to go with some of the top scorers. You know, the guys like Steph Curry and Durant and some of those guys, Dwayne Wade and, you know, LeBron, some of those guys who have the ball so much. You know, those guys know how to do it. You know, DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry do a great job of drawing contact and drawing fouls in the league. And they demonstrated it last year, but especially DeMar, I think he was third or second or whatever getting to the free throw line during the regular season. So, you know, DeMar does a great job of creating. So you have some guys that do a great job of creating contact. Harden in Houston is one of the hardest guys to guard because of his strength and power and ability to draw contact. So there's a lot of excellent players in the league who can draw contact, who can make sure they sell the call and sell the play. And so that's what makes officiating so, so difficult, and that's one job that I wouldn't want to have.
Coach, as always, wonderful to have you. Really appreciate you taking time. I know you're gearing up for Wednesday's game against the Pistons, but thanks for doing this. Best of luck, and look forward to another successful season. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Dean and George.
Take care. That's Coach Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Toronto Raptors.
How do you not root for that guy?
Oh, he's the best. Lucky, I tell you what, we've got some good head coaches, good managers from Gibbons.
A lot of personality in this city.
Yeah, big time. Gibbons is a lot of fun. Babcock is always a great soundbite.
Greg Vanney.
Yep. Coach Scott Malone.
Coach Malunkovich. Right? 847. Going to wrap it up and hand it over
Frisbee guy.
Jeff Blair next. You're listening to Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. You're listening to Dean Blundell and Company on Toronto's sports radio. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. When I get you
all alone, I'm gonna take what is this? Oh, turn this off immediately.
Yeah, I hate this song too, Dean.
8:54, that's pretty much it for us. The Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt coming up next. I believe they're going to talk to Tim Bezbachenko, the general manager of Toronto FC, who secured a playoff spot. They're playing on Wednesday.
He's the architect of back-to-back playoff appearances for the soccer team in this city.
Yeah, it's a good story. I don't care how you feel about soccer, whether you like it or not, and I happen to not follow soccer on a general basis, but it's a great story. You've got a Blue Jays team that made it to the American League Championship Series, pounded by a worse team, by the way. You got a Leaf team that's fun to watch, exciting. The Raptors kick up again on Wednesday. We just talked to head coach Dwayne Casey.
Yep.
It's a good time. It's a good time to be in the city of Toronto. So Jeff Blair is coming up next. Where do we finish with our Twitter poll questions, Ryan Favreau?
Who is the better band? 45% say Nirvana.
Yes!
There you go. You've been swaying that vote all morning. 44% Foo Fighters.
Ooh, that's a tight vote.
7% 98 Degrees. 4% Soul Decision, which I thought...
Soul Decision.
I thought Soul Decision should have been higher. And the Leafs poll question. 5 games into the season. How you feeling right now, Leafs fans? 59% encouraged. 26% uninterested. 15% frustrated. So there you go.
Here you go. Encouraging. They get at it tomorrow night. Leafs Lightning, 7:30, Sportsnet 1. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. The Jeff Blair with Stephen Brunt. Next, you're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan.